Hello, everyone. You're listening to Quasi-Indefatigable Zenless. I haven't done a Quasi-Indefatigable Zenless in a long time. At least not one that was specifically just for this recording, as opposed to the podcast. I had a thought come to mind. Well, okay, I've been thinking about it for a little while. And it comes up every now and then, you know. It's not like it's just the revelations just come to me. It's something that comes every now and then, and then you kind of push it down because other things get in the way. And then you come back, and it comes back up again. There is a law irrevocably decreed in heaven that the sun, this time of year, at 7:30 in the morning, will shine in your face, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Chip hunts down. Excuse me. Oh. There's a meeting coming up here. This comes up again because there's a meeting coming up at in Lubbock. All of a sudden, all the bishops, the branch presidents, the stake presidents, and clerks and things like that are being called in to Lubbock kind of on pretty short notice, you know, as if somebody is coming through and something's happening on the spur of the moment, which is kind of funny for the church because the church usually plans ahead and gives us lots of heads up on everything, and this really isn't happening. So at 4 o'clock, we're going to a big meeting in Lubbock, and that means a regional meeting because that's our kind of our regional center is in Lubbock. And people are getting, understandably, you know, everybody's speculating about what it's about, and I don't know. I've been having the inspiration for a little while, or since this has happened, to think about stakes. And when I went back to the Doctrine and Covenants about how stakes are, now, I don't say we have a different organization than what is called for in the Scriptures, but it certainly has more stuff than is called for in the Scriptures. Therefore, I think we have a certain amount of latitude here. The Lord hasn't specified, you know, there's going to be branches and wards, and they'll be looked over by branch presidents and bishops and those kinds of things. Bishops have specific things to do, but it never really calls for kind of a ward type of thing. That was never called for in the Scripture, so it's kind of interesting, and you kind of wonder exactly what's going to be happening here. And this is what came to mind. I was reading about that. But when it comes down to the last days, it seems that there's some interesting things said. Now, I can't quote them here because I don't have the scriptures in front of me, for Pete's sakes. And maybe it's just my perception of it. That's pretty common. You know, you're going to get your own perceptions on this thing. Don't know if they're right or wrong. But there's one thing I do know is right, and that is the need for personal repentance. Personal. We can't depend on larger structures to help us. They're good to helping us develop the personal righteousness, the personal desire. But when it comes down to it, you have to have that personal desire. And if you don't have it, well, then it's I won't say it's all for naught, but you aren't going to be saved. That's just it. Your magnificent bishop can't step in and take your place. He can't be your savior. You know, it all really boils down to the individual people, the essential structure that the Lord put together to help people get back to Him was the family. And unfortunately, we have so abandoned the family. We've become so, you know, you hear more and more and more about the church family, which I guess equates to kind of a ward. And that's, I think that is somewhat dangerous territory to tread upon, because it can't take the place of the family. And the brethren have been somewhat strident about that. This stuff is not to take the place of family time. Although it tends to anyway. It really does. It's become so poignant in my branch, it's starting to make me crazy. I guess it becomes a decision between the traditionalists, which say, oh, this is the way it's always, you know, it's attack a lot of people end up taking, even when it's not true. And it's not true. You know, people say, oh, there's always been wards, always been branches, it's always been, this is the way the Lord set it up to be. And you go, no, He didn't. No, we came up with this. Now, I'm not going to say that these kind of structures weren't inspired. I won't say that. But it's certainly not dictated in the scriptures that we have that this is the structure it should take. The family is far more important. And we just see over and over and over again the branch or the ward kind of always pushing to take a prominence, you know, that these things are more important. You know, you need to listen to your bishop. You know, don't listen to your father, because he's probably wrong. He's probably screwed up. You know, listen to your bishop. Listen to your stake president. And these things are real problematic. And I really don't know where all this stuff is leading. I don't really know what this all entails or what it means or if I'm even right. Okay, so I'm not saying that's what they're going to talk about in Lubbock this Saturday. The surprise meeting also got called a week before, you know, week before things started happening. Some of the conjecture is that it's about the gas prices, that we're going to have some wholesale changes, and they need it to happen faster than General Conference. Perhaps, you know, I don't know. It certainly is interesting, and I'm sure we'll find out. For all I know, an apostle just happens to be coming through, and they've got a layover in Lubbock, or they just happen to feel a desire to come to Lubbock, and that's all, you know, that we need strengthening, which is perfectly fine. It's marvelous. I need some. I was just reading the scriptures about that the downtrodden will be comforted. And that just, it just sang with me, because, you know, I've been feeling? I've been feeling downtrodden. And I'm sorry to say that it is the structure of the church, it's how the church is, that is part of my downtroddenness. And, you know, that, in my mind, that shouldn't be. But I don't know how to solve it. And I don't feel like I'm in a position to do anything about it without being rebellious, without just walking away from it, which is bad. That's walking away from our only source for the priesthood. That's walking away, you know, it's almost like you're almost in this kind of deal. Do you want the priesthood? Do you want your temple recommend? Well, if you want it, you're going to have to dance the way it wants you to dance. And it's starting to make me nuts, because, you know, I like to think I'm an intelligent person. I like to think that I can see things and I can look forward and say, well, this is what this is coming to. And it doesn't look good to me. I don't know, you know, I don't want to talk bad about people. But you need to talk about problems that are happening. And I feel I have no appropriate outlet. And I've been chastised in the past, and I'm sure I will be chastised in the future. But I find myself wanting to just not to be as involved for the simple reason that I'm tired of being chastised for talking about where I feel like the Lord is leading me. You know, I'm always accused, well, not always, I'm accused on occasion of being led by the wrong spirit. And it's like, well, then you're going to have to help me learn what the spirit is, because this sure feels like the spirit to me. And I can't tell you how many times it's frustrating. It's almost like the current structure of the church is detrimental to the work of the Lord. In the past, and I push it aside because it's just not reality, so why on earth think about it particularly? Why spend time on something that isn't true? The time when they just turn off a whole lot of the church as we know it, and begin to concentrate almost wholly upon the basics. That we're going to get back to the basics. And it's going to be much more family-oriented and centered. And and we will reinstate patriarchs. Of course, we're going to have other things, you know, that are important too. You know, the prophet and the apostles, very important. The 70, very important. Mentioned in the scriptures how we should have them. You know, those who help the 12 in their labors as the work expands. You know, bishops are still needed to make sure that things are carried out properly. You know, the proper ordinances are overseen by someone who has authority to make sure they're overseen properly. You know, the bishop is in charge of Aaronic priesthood. The stake president is in charge of Melchizedek priesthood, things going on. What comes to mind is my concerns that at a time when we needed to look Protestant, at a time of development of the church when it was mostly in the United States and the people who we were appealing to were mostly Protestants, and so the church structure, the way the church was done, was mostly a Protestant thing. So our church looks just like kind of a cleaned up version of a Protestant church. That we may be coming to the to where we need to open up to other paradigms, perhaps. you know, we need to stop looking like a Protestant church and start looking more like something else. Well, maybe a little closer to our actual roots. You know, the primitive church that Jesus Christ founded was founded because, you know, it was done in a very Jewish way. It mirrored the synagogue. It mirrored it was basically a copy of Judaism. When Paul would go and travel, he would go and he'd travel first and he'd go to the synagogues. And then he'd do street meetings. The kind of stuff that seemed to work in the society that was prevalent at the time among the Greeks, among the Romans, among the different things. We might be seeing a wholesale change now because we need to move to a different model. You know. Because the model was very different in Abraham's time. Abraham's time, it was strictly family. You know, families were much larger. You stayed together in groups, or you tended to marry cousins, second cousins, third, first cousins even. You tended to marry within that family group because that's where the gospel was. That's where the priesthood was. A patriarch would give the priesthood to his sons. There was, you know, in Abraham's time there was Melchizedek, and Abraham went and gave his tithes to Melchizedek because I guess that was his priesthood leader. You know, like there was parallel things going on. Most of the Bible is, most of the Old Testament is the story of a family and how they had problems and how they grew and how big they got. The actual covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, is a family covenant. That's why one needs to be sealed in a chain, and you are brought into to Abraham's family. Baptism becomes an adoption, if you're not already a member of Abraham's family, becomes an adoption into Abraham's family, so that you may have the family covenant. Perhaps we're getting back to that. I don't know. I don't know. I don't predict what's going to happen because I don't know. I've been wrong often enough that I'm not going to sit here and speculate and say, oh, I know. But I won't be surprised if that's what it is. It'll be interesting to see if these are changes that go in that direction. Because I have often thought, I said, you know, one of the things that stops the progress of the church in some ways is our adherence to the appearance of Protestantism. Our adherence to saying, oh no, we worship the same God you guys do. We worship the same Jesus Christ you do. And that to a degree, when we do that, we throw a wet blanket over our beliefs so that we might conform a little better. Well, you know, the brethren may yell at me for saying that. But that's the way I see it. If we need to make a wholesale change, then we need to make a wholesale change. If we need to stop, I mean, we've slowly been pulling away from Protestant, from our Protestant, I don't want to call them roots because they're really not our roots, but our Protestant look and feel, we need to, I think it's important that we pull away from that. Because we probably need to start getting closer to the model of what we need to be in the future, how it's going to be in the millennium, maybe. You know, how's that going to be? I think it's families. I think it's that way. And you're going to have to associate yourself with a family. You know, back in feudal times, you would associate yourself with a lord, and you would basically become kind of a part of his family, you know, is his household. And we might get to that point, you know, these are the families. And that it might be, you know, it might smack a little of polygamy in a way. Not that these women will be your wives, but that you will look out for them. Kind of a deeper form of home teaching. You know, that you know, we might have a community together. We might choose to come together. And although not married, you know, but still kind of, here's our family head. He's a man. And he leads our group, perhaps. I don't know. And I don't know if we're just going to have one bishop in the church and all these other bishops will just go away. It's kind of like the 70s. You know, we used to have stake 70s and there were thousands of 70s. And then all of a sudden, boom, there weren't. They said, no more stake 70s. You need to go back into the elders' quorum. And for those who are going to be high priest, you make them high priest. And that's what you do. I don't know. It could. There is no, you know, we wouldn't be violating any scripture to talk about this, to even go in that direction. It would not be a violation. I don't know. Getting to the point to where the communication systems doesn't require us to be all out separate. You know, I mean, all have little mini versions of the church out in the universe. You know, that doesn't seem to be necessary. On a stake level, that seems to be something necessary. Now, I don't know what forms, you know, it doesn't really say how many people should be in a stake, what form it should take, stuff like that. Something that can handle the needs of the Melchizedek priesthood, I would suppose. I'm not sure. We seem to be operating a good deal with information that isn't, particularly in the scriptures we have now, that isn't spelled out, and that we can do things differently. Anyway, so these are the things I've been thinking about. I just read in the scriptures. I was looking up under stakes because the stake thing was coming, and I came across a thing that talks about the parents' responsibility to their kids. How the parents have to pray their children, have to teach them the tenets of the gospel by the time they're 8. And this is associated with the stake thing. And I think too often we give that over to the branch or the ward, and the ward takes care of this. And it's gotten to the point to where very broken families join the church, and they are maybe a little too reliant upon the whole structure, you know, because people talk about, well, the bishop is the father of our ward, and you go, whoa, wait a minute, that's almost saying that fathers are secondary to this most important guy in the middle, this bishop. This bishop becomes the guy who makes all the ultimate decisions. And that's, and you know what? In some ways, I find that improper. Number one, it tends to hurt a bishop in that he gets a really swelled head out of it, or he can. And he might intervene too much in what would be considered family affairs. What needs to happen? And this kind of surrogate family that a warden of branch kind of instigates can't really do the job. It can't do the job. You know, the bishop's main thing was to handle the widows and the fatherless. And the problem is we're being really encouraging toward making almost everybody kind of fatherless. And everybody's supposed to turn to that bishop and to this structure that he has under him, the ward of the branch, for their needs. You know, when we get down to saying, well, you know, the people are more important than the programs, the branch and the ward really have a problem doing that. They can't do that. That's, you know, these things should be trying to strengthen fathers, heads of households. Unfortunately, we're getting a pretty low number of fathers. I come from a place where there are very few fathers, very few fathers that lead their families. Our culture has emaciated manhood and fatherhood. It practically doesn't exist. You know, the laws certainly don't support that kind of concept. None of this stuff does. Now, I'll be really honest, you know, that's kind of where I'm coming from. We need to re-enshrine the family. The Family Proclamation is a wonderful document, and everything needs to kind of revolve around the family, but really when it gets down to it, wards and branches kind of chew up the family and cause the family some problems. I know my family, part of our biggest troubles in our family comes from the fact that branch church responsibilities invade so often. Now, I see the great point. You know, I can think of specific examples, like, say, in my branch group, where families don't work, yet their kids come to church. You know, we bring their kids to church. And And there's not a whole lot we can do about them. We find ourselves fighting against family perceptions, you know, a very worldly family, yet their kids come to church for whatever reason. I'm thinking of two girls who, you know, I don't know why they come to church. I really don't. I think it's social. I think it's for interesting. I don't really comprehend it because I'm not. I have often accused myself of being very simple-minded, and I think I am in a way, and I just really can't fathom what these people are. You know, what motivates these people? I worry that it's just a deep, deep, deep sickness, and that they've gotten to the point where they're just grasping at any old thing. Anybody who pays them any attention at all, they're going to do whatever it takes, they think, to get that kind of attention. You know, but is it based on having a testimony or anything? No. It's based strictly on doing what they think people should be doing. And that when we put together and our branches become these big piles of these really broken people that don't have families and that don't really feel the need to create a family because society has walked away from that whole thing, and that the wards and branches worked better when there were families. And it's really obvious that, at least to me, that I think wards and branches are relics. I think they have outlasted, in a way, their purpose. Now you might say, oh well, there's a stake thing, and you know, I don't know if it's really so much a place as a geographical, like, territory, so that the priesthood can take care of what it needs to do. That these things need to, you know, that there doesn't need to be a stake center, a big building where they all get together. That stakes may just be more of, you know, those phone trees when somebody's in trouble in a really organized place will have a phone tree going. But there's some place where you can call to take care of people. Take care of these things. The brethren have been struggling with what they can do about a bishop's load. And I think it's because we've given too much of family, of patriarchal responsibility, and shoved it on to a poor bishop, and we need to let that go. We simply need to let that go, I think. And you can have a bishop over a geographical region for purposes of administration to make sure record keeping and ordinances are done properly, you know, the saving ordinances are done correctly, but it's not a superior calling to a father like it is perceived to be. Probably the brethren don't want it to be that way, but that's the way it is. You know, I'm a father, but I report to a bishop. If the bishop tells me my family's not running right, I feel I'm constrained to obey a bishop concerning my family. And it shouldn't be that way. Father should go to the Lord. And the Lord should be the ruler over that family, with the father acting as the priesthood leader, kind of the go-between, in concert with his counselor, his wife. Let's take, for instance, like a baptism needs to happen. A bishop would be one of those people that come to just make sure it gets done right. There might be two witnesses. One would be the bishop to make sure it's done properly. And the second one might be a clerk for the area who would come and make sure the recording and everything else is done. And that would be that might end up just being a pair that travel in a geographic area strictly for the work of the Aaronic priesthood. Now, you know, and it wouldn't be, you know, and we would only get together on occasion, you know, instead of weekly. You know, when people say, and people got together off to fast and pray with one another, this may be handled in a different way. It may not be a weekly thing. You know, and people always say, oh, we've always had Fast Sunday. You know, we have to go Fast Sunday. And you go, no, we haven't. Fast meetings used to happen during the week. In Joseph Smith's time, there was no Fast Sunday. There were no, you know, I don't even recall if there were, you know, if they really specifically got together on Sunday particularly. They would get together and talk at different times about different issues. Of course, that was a much smaller group. You know, we already have the structure of the stake, and it is something and it is somewhat recorded in Scripture. It's the way it's supposed to be. There is supposed to be a president, a stake presidency, and a high council. The other things aren't discussed. But that seems to be the way that the Melchizedek priesthood is to operate, is in that way. There is essentially for an area kind of a mini form. It's actually the basic form of the church, of the administrative church outside of families, is on the stake level. And you know, bishops can't really do a whole lot without the permission of the stake president, because the stake president is the person that really, really holds that thing. The fact that when you call a bishop, it has to be approved by the first presidency almost indicates that it is something separate off to the side. More of a presiding bishopric is the bishopric, and that there really isn't anything else. You know, he may have, there may be more than one bishop. Nobody's saying there should only be one, but it's almost kind of a separate division of the church. That there's something that you go to. It's almost like in a government, there is, you know, there's a president and there's his cabinet and stuff like that. And you might have a welfare department, but it's run by different people, you know. And it isn't a Melchizedek priesthood function. You know, and that's a whole lot I think bishops are supposed to be about, is about that temporal thing. Spiritual should be handled, and, you know, spiritual and temporal, although they are together, they are handled through different channels. They didn't talk about the stake president's storehouse. It was called the bishop's storehouse. And these things were handed off to somebody else who was a bishop. Originally, each stake had one bishop. At the time, you know, in Joseph Smith's day, there were bishops. Now, you know, when there was a lot of temporal need going on, you know, I've read books about how Brigham Young instituted bishops here, there, and everywhere to take care of small groups, and these people were called as if they were bishops, although they were like captains of 10, captains of 50, captains of 100, that kind of thing. These things were like that. I am not speaking for the church at all. These are just my perceptions. Given what I see and the struggles that we go through with the way that wards and branches have almost become the center of the church, and it's off the mark. I'm sorry to say it. It's not scriptural. Or at least the scripture we have now. I will not speak to the revelations that are given otherwise, because I can't speak on those. I can't speak. That's something for the brethren to do. You know, because they were the ones that came up with these things. They were the ones that put this kind of structure into place, and they're the ones to take it away or to reform it or do whatever they're going to do. But these things are all swirling around in my head before this little meeting on Saturday. I'm thinking, well, you know, this is, you know, I can say very simply, our branch is broken. It's broken in a pretty profound way. And I wonder, and I hear my brother rumbling. He's a first counselor in a bishopric in Utah. And he struggles with these kinds of issues, and it almost seems to be, well, is it some kind of weird, twisted need that, you know, these wards and branches need to be larger families? And it's not working. It's institutional, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You know, home teaching is fundamentally broken. You know, we have people that do it. We have a lot of people that don't. And the institutional, and they get to be, they're just really institutional ways we try to fix these things, and they're just fundamentally, these things don't lend themselves to these institutional solutions. And I'm the kind of guy that steps back and says, well, are we just doing it? Is there another model that we can follow? Because this is very institutional, you know. The branch president is the CEO. I'm the CFO. I'm the chief financial officer, maybe the chief operating officer. The COO and the CFO. You know, and what does this pretend for all of us? What does this mean? What do we need to do? If we get rid of branches and wards and organize things differently around the stake presidency and the high council, you know, how does that fix things? Or how would that go? Tithing would become a whole different sort of animal. This would devolve up to the state clerk. There would be more mailing of this money in instead of handing it in to a bishop. You know, your bishop may be more distant than that because what he does is he goes around and takes care of ordinances that need to be done. He authorizes these things and he's in charge of basic worthiness, and that ends up being that thing, you know. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he even becomes involved with the temple recommends particularly anymore, or if that becomes almost solely a thing that the state does, or how that might be split up in the future. Because we don't know. I really don't know what to tell you. Anyway, so that's what I've been thinking about here for a while. That's what's coming to me. When it came down to the basic unit program, which I thought would really work well for our branch, you know, I've been pretty roundly condemned. Well, not condemned. It's not an attack on me. It's just that we aren't going to do that. And it's like, well, wait a minute. This has come down from the brethren. This isn't like my idea. This really is kind of doctrine. And I, you know, and I see it as this thing, you know. Our branch struggles so much over scouting and young women, and how important these things are, and how we've just got to have them. And you know what? It's not important in my family. It's not important in my family at all. And I find myself at odds with my brethren who say that, you know, because our branch is small, if my family doesn't participate in these things fall apart. You know, so people get angry and nasty and say, we have to have your children. You have to be a part of this. And if you're not, well, you know, I'm worried that it's going to come down to, well, you're apostatizing from the church. And you go, if this is what the church is, you're right. I am apostatizing from this. I thought the church was the mechanism through which people are brought back to God. You know, scouting and the activity arm of Aaronic priesthood, it's becoming dominant, and it's like, but that's not getting us anywhere. I know it could be helpful. Anything could be helpful. You know, slinging cow chips at each other for fun and saying a prayer afterwards, you know, can help bring people together, I guess, as long as they're not too steamy. You know? just because we've decided this is the model we're going to use, and you go, but it doesn't fit my family, but my family's course is doing it anyway. I'm wandering. I am distancing myself from those things. And I know that's essentially, that really strikes at the heart of the branch is the most important thing. Everybody needs to sacrifice for the branch, for some common good. And you go, I've got a family to take care of, and the church is frankly kind of getting in the way of this. And if that's what the church is all about, you know, I don't want to lose my temple recommend. I don't want to lose my priesthood over it. I feel like I'm trying to do a good job on these things. But it's like, help me out here. Help me out here. I know this is for other other people need this. People who don't have families. But that ward and that branch is really useful for those whose families are broken and destroyed, or that doesn't work right, or for part member families. That's really what that church structure is for. But we're pulling down, like my family. My family gets shoved down by the current structure. So yeah, am I going to be brokenhearted when these things end? You know, I know people, oh, we don't do church ball anymore. that was, you know, and it's almost like, was that what the gospel, which is the whole reason for the church, meant to you, was just a place to go and play basketball? Is that what the church ends up being? And we end up kind of making branch activities and church activities for that reason. To fulfill other people's needs. And that's what the church becomes. And when you don't have that, people start wandering off and say, oh, we've got to get those. We've got to get more. We've got to get people more excited about coming to church. And you go, the only reason why they should come to church is to get back to God. If that's not interesting to them, they're really becoming a drag. And that's where I'm coming from. People are kind of being a drag on it. And I know that these activities may keep people coming, and that as they keep coming, they may feel the Spirit. They may start that conversion process. But the question is, isn't there 50 other ways to do this? It wasn't necessary in some places in the past. It didn't have to go in together and do that. People had their outside lives, and the church is almost, you know, branches start getting kind of insular. We were talking in the last branch presidency meeting, and I did speak out about it. You know, people are saying, well, we're losing kids to the Baptist church because the Baptist church has funner activities than we do. And we need to get better at that. And you go, we've only got two young men that come. Well, we need to get to that together somehow because we need to make our thing work. And you're going, so you're wanting people to come to church solely for the activities. It's just like the 180 program that Christian churches like. It's going and having fun at a community center with a little sprinkling of Jesus in there. You know, with a Jesus sprinkle. And I think that's what we're falling, the Mormon church is falling into it too. Because we're feeling the need to compete with Protestants. Because we look and feel like a Protestant church. So people expect that of us. And it's almost like, well, we need to back off from that just so that when people join the church, they'll be joining the church for the right reason. Not to downplay the fact that wonderful missionary work can happen on the basketball court, you know, at the Mormon church. But I know our little branch can't sustain that kind of stuff, even though there's this desperate need to try and do that, because we feel like we can't keep people interested in the church unless we do all those things. You know, we need to play basketball every Thursday because that brings people out. Maybe they'll join the church. Well, the majority of them don't. You know. And I struggle with that because I'm sorry. That's not what the church means to me. And I question, and it's not important to me. It's not important to my family. My family is what's important to me. And my family is what's important to my family. I try to get that across. And the church actually kind of tromples all over that and gets demanding and spreads guilt. You know, that I need to be more involved with this, and I need to be more involved with that. And you know what it does? It takes away from family needs, because I tend to dismiss family needs in favor of branch needs, as if they're superior. And that's wrong. And that's wrong. I'm not one of the brethren. I don't proclaim any of this, because it would be very easy to say that it's evil speaking of the Lord's anointed. I don't think I'm evil speaking to the brethren. Now, when it comes down to my stake and my branch level, and they have different priorities than I do, I could be accused. And have I been? I don't think I have been. I've always tried to keep my disgruntledness secret, or try to. I can't say that I do a good job at all. I hope the church is moving in the direction more towards supporting family. I hope it's just not, I think with the brethren it's not lip service. I think the problem is getting getting the local leadership to understand that. I really do. Well, I'm about to my destination. I need to stop talking. I hope this isn't too terrible. It was something I didn't want to put on the podcast because it's something really, really divisive. It doesn't need to be public yet. People who look at my recordings, they can see it. It's not easy to get to, and I think that's good. Today is the 15th of January, 2008. I put this on here. I just felt the desire to put that on there. I don't know if it's the spirit or what. Just so people know when I record this and when I stated this. I don't know why that's important, but I feel the need to do it. Just like Nephi felt the need to write the small plates and to record the things he did in it. I don't know where this will come in. But I won't have a problem with the wholesale change. I think a lot of people will. That the church will change in a fundamental way. Now, not in a gospel way, but if people felt like the gospel constituted that there are branches and wards, and there's a bishop over a branch and a ward, that they haven't been reading their scriptures very well, perhaps. And I'm not saying that I've got a good handle on it either, but I'm trying. And I can see that stuff, you know, it doesn't say in scripture exactly how it's supposed to go. You look back at the church at Joseph Smith's time, I think people would be absolutely flummoxed by the fact that it looked a whole lot different than ours does now. And most of the things that we think are ordained were just thought about, planned, and put into practice. And that's basically it. And if changes do come, I think I'm in a good position. I've got, you know, it's going to be difficult for those who a Protestant-looking church, is their concept of what's right. You know, I can see a lot of apostasy come out of this stuff, that people just walk away from church and say, this is the church I grew up with, that the brethren have strayed from the truth. You know, although I said it was all about the prophet, I'm not willing to go there, you know, because I think the prophet has fallen. I think he's gone nuts. I think he's old and he's senile or whatever. That a lot of people will resort to those kinds of things. And the church may very well split over it, you know. And if it does, well, it does. I'll continue to follow the prophet and the brethren, read the Doctrine and Covenants, and say this is what it says. And that as long as the structure meets the criteria, and as long as the prophets and apostles today are behind it, I'll be behind it. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Quasi Indefatigable Zenilith. And whatever may come, stay close to the prophets, stay close to the apostles. No matter what, even if it goes totally the other way for me and it becomes more of a mechanistic thing and more and more broken. It makes me think, though, you know, we say the same thing, the Relief Society and the Brethren say the same thing, but we do it separately. And it's like, why do we do that? Why don't we just study it together as families? And it's like, well, good question. Why? Why don't we just do it this way? Seems to make more sense. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. Have a great day. Let's see if I find my pointer here. Oh, where's my pointer? There it is. Uh-oh.